Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
What's up? What's up? Happy Monday, guys. Dr. Tom here, and you're listening to The Positivity Effect, episode number 20. I hope you guys had a great week, but today is the start of a new week. Remember, it's Monday, and we treat Monday kindly, because when we do, it'll treat us kindly in return. Remember, every day is a new day, and it's a new day to take a step in the right direction. Doesn't matter what happened yesterday. Every day we should be focusing on things like positivity and creating change in our world. And today we talk about mental toughness and how it's not something that we're born with. We can really learn it as a skill. And to teach us about mental toughness today is Mike Margolis, a mental toughness coach and the author of The Athlete Within You, A Mental Approach to Sports and Business. You can check out Mike at mikemargolis.com. and mentaltraininginc.com. I had the pleasure of chatting with Mike a few days after the Super Bowl, and I picked his brain about athletes like Cam Newton, and we talked about golf too, and guys like Tiger Woods, and we really chatted about what mental toughness looks like in their world. Mike has a great story of how as a young athlete growing up, he didn't believe in himself, which drove him to never really stick with a sport. And as time went on, this created a burning desire in him to find a better way and to coach athletes in a better way, which led him to take up a master's in sports science and sports psychology at the University of Denver. Now as a coach, he teaches others that mental toughness is nothing more than a skill to be learned, an idea that he learned from one of his mentors, which I'm going to leave as a surprise. It's actually kind of funny. When he tells me who the mentor is, I was like starstruck, and I said the word like probably 6 or 7 times in a row because I was starstruck. Super cool. You'll just have to hear my awkwardness for yourself. So without further delay, here's Mike Margolis. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Not much. Thomas, how are you?
I'm good. Thinking about mental toughness today, and I'm thinking about how, you know, it's something I think a lot of us we romanticize it sometimes, and you know, it's something that we all should be focusing on, and it's a big part of really your journey and what you're doing today and how you're helping athletes and you're helping individuals take their mental game to the next level, you know, whether it's in their personal life or whether they're an athlete. You know, and I want to talk a little bit, you know, because I gave a little intro, you know, before you came on the show about, you know, what you do and who you are. But I want to hear it really from you about where did this idea of mental toughness start for you? You know, where did it start where you said this is the road or the path that I'm really going to start driving down?
Well, I guess it starts with the fact that I proudly say, I guess today, that I was a failed athlete. And I say that tongue in cheek in that I failed at every level. I failed in high school. I started and quit 3 sports in high school. I played Division I college football. It was the second string wide receiver as a freshman, and I quit that even though I was going to be the starting wide receiver the next year. Took up soccer. While I didn't quit soccer for the same reason as a senior in college or playing professionally at the next level, I quit those because there wasn't any money in it. But I failed as an athlete because I didn't have the mental toughness. You know, I couldn't handle the stress. I couldn't stay focused. You know, I was that typical player that played really well in practice, but when the spotlight was on, I couldn't do it. And I didn't believe in myself. I didn't have any confidence. If a coach would yell at me, it would destroy me for that day. I tended to blame coaches. And I went to do my master's degree in sports science and sports psychology to really become a better coach, either soccer or football. And the first person I met when I stepped onto the campus at the University of Denver, my department chair was busy, and he said, "I'll be with you in a minute. Talk to Bruce." And Bruce was this kindly older guy who wanted to know my background. Did I play sports? Why was I at the University of Denver? What were my goals? Those kinds of things. And so I told him, more or less like I just talked to you and your audience about. Bruce's reaction was a little different and unexpected. Not sympathy. He laughed at me. And he said, "Mike, those are just skills. And you could learn them anytime. The ability to handle stress, the ability to stay focused, your confidence even, those are just skills." And that kind of took me back, and I said, "So who are you?" And he said, "Bruce." I said, "Sir, what's your last name?" And he goes, "Bruce Ogilvy." That name,
wow.
I knew.
Wow.
Bruce Ogilvy, for people who don't know, is the father of modern sports psychology in North America. And he was my best, he was my department chair's best friend. And so the two of them sucked me into the dark side, as I sometimes say.
Did you know at the time, like who you were like talking to, like what, well, that meant to you?
I knew when he said Ogilvy, I knew the name because I had studied him as an undergrad. I had seen him. I had seen his name in Sports Illustrated when he worked with the 49ers and Major League Baseball. You know, he's a rock star back then. We didn't call him rock stars back then, but, you know, he was really a rock star. And
wow, that must have hit you.
And so it was like, wow. And then it hit me, you mean I could really change these things? And that's when I started on that journey of learning how to help people become mentally tough. We didn't call it that back then, but that's in essence what it was. How we can teach mental skills, how we can help people pass their own self-imposed limitations. And it's really not that difficult because it's just a skill. It's just like learning to hit a golf ball, catch a football, or shoot a basketball. It's just a skill. And if you apply yourself and work on it as a skill, then we don't need all these developmental kinds of things that the self-discovery, the long drawn out process of change. We can start making changes in our lives starting right now.
Would you say that, Bruce, you know, going through all the different athletic programs, you know, growing up, you had many coaches, but would you say that, like, Bruce, in this realm of mental toughness, he was really like one of the first mentors to you in this arena?
Well, he was definitely my first mentor that way. I mean, all of my other mentors outside of my soccer coach in college, you know, all the other coaches I'd ever had, you know, their idea of making you mentally tough was break you down. And if you survive, then you're going to be tough. And if you don't survive, then you didn't have it. Just like if you don't have a jump shot, well, you're never going to have a jump shot. Well, we know that's nonsense, but we didn't ever think of it back then as if you don't have the right mental framework, then all right, well, let's just change that. Let's just make it work. And it's not by beating you to a pulp and if you survive, then, you know, you were worthy. It's let's change the way you think about this. Let's teach you how to relax, how to be calm, how do you motivate yourself? Don't wait for your coach to, motivates you. Don't wait for your teachers or your parents. How do you motivate yourself? How do you stay focused? You know, how do you play the game in a carefree way? I mean, these are the things that we teach today.
What does that look like? You know, when someone's, you know, they're you think of like an athlete, and you know, when we see them making that amazing catch, you know, we think of the Super Bowl. They're making that amazing catch on TV, and we see that snapshot of just how incredible their abilities are. But then we don't think about, you know, the hours and hours and hours and hours of training behind the scenes, and then even the time, even when they're those athletes, they're not surrounded by their coach. What does that look like for them, or even someone that's not famous? You know, when you're in the dark and you have to motivate yourself.
Well, you know, I think you bring up something that, rather than let's focus on something famous right now. We just finished a little football game 2 days ago. And there's some stark contrast there, especially at the end of the game. And I'm not trying to bag on Cam Newton, who I don't know other than watching him play on TV. You know, obviously a very skilled, athletic individual. Didn't handle the mental toughness thing very well towards the end of the game.
Yeah, definitely.
And afterwards. And we'll probably not ever make that mistake again, hopefully. Maybe he'll grow from it. Maybe he'll become mentally tougher because he actually works at it. Certainly some of the interviews I heard yesterday from people like Herm Edwards, you know, what kinds of advice that they would give him based on that. You know, he let down towards the end of the game when he saw that he couldn't win or didn't think he was going to win. And rather than, you know, that one scene where he doesn't dive on the ball that he just fumbled, whether he would have gotten there or not, it doesn't make any difference. He wasn't willing to sell out for his teammates. That had a great impact on everything else. His shoulders dropped, his head dropped afterwards. He was no longer the same player. He was no more likely to be able to get the ball back and drive them back down, only being behind 6 points at that point in time. Those are the things that we can learn from. Athletes today can, I mean, I'm using that with the athletes that I'm working with right now, is look at the way he handled that. How could he have done this differently? Last year, the team that I follow a great deal, the Seattle Seahawks, they also had a meltdown on the last play of the game. But you saw a whole different way that Russell Wilson carried himself afterwards, even though he'd thrown the pick. He didn't blame his offensive coordinator, who I actually think was the guy who made the mistake. Pete Carroll took the blame for the offensive coordinator. People handled it much differently. They handled it in a way that said, I'm comfortable with who I am. I'm mentally tough enough to get through this. And they will be back. I've seen athletes like Cam Newton have this kind of meltdown, and without making change, may not get back.
So would you say, you know, thinking about someone like Tiger Woods, you know, how important, you know, when you're out in that limelight, the mental game, the mental toughness, if you're, you know, everything else crumbles down around you also if you're not focusing on the personal side of things too, your personal journey. Like, I think that's what happened to him. He can't get back on the saddle because of everything that happened.
Well, I have a different view of what's wrong with Tiger Woods, but because I don't think it has anything to do with that personal journey other than that he's never been satisfied with his swing, and so he keeps firing the golf gurus that have been working on his swing because he's never doesn't quite ever believe that his swing is right. But make no mistake, I think Tiger Woods has broken down primarily because his body has broken down. You know, he's got the back problems. He had the knee problem. Yeah, there's been insinuations that he was using performance-enhancing drugs before he got hurt to keep his body in that top fit position. His physician was caught coming back from Canada with anabolic steroids. His body has just broken down, and then with the never being satisfied with your swing, that's what's had the impact. The fact that he got caught by his ex-wife having affairs, that kind of stuff. He was having those affairs during the best time of his career. He was sneaking around almost every night on tour with different people. It wasn't affecting his game. I mean, he was winning tournament after tournament.
It's interesting. What, it's like, yeah, it comes down to him, his actual performance his vision of who he sees himself as, yeah, as a golfer.
Yeah. And so that's where his issues have kind of gone, I think. When he was at his best, he's the person we kind of point to as being that naturally mentally tough individual. I mean, he could be down three or four strokes and finish with five birdies.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You know, he'd get the lead and he'd never give it up. I mean, it used to be that he was unbeatable in a playoff. So his mental toughness came, you know, from his upbringing, from his training with his, you know, from his dad and his mom. You know, and he developed that. And so I think that you don't lose that just because of, you know, his infidelities. He lost that because his body's broken down. And, you know, you can see that. I mean, he's had, I don't know, three or four back operations in the last year and a half. He's had, I think, a couple of knee operations. Sometimes the body breaks down, and there's not much you can do about that. His insistence that his swing has never been good enough, you know, that's a little bit different. But,
what is that point? You know, when an athlete is, they're focusing on continually growing and becoming better, but then, you know, like they, that level of just acceptance or of having awareness that you have to be okay with where you're at, you know, like okay with the mistakes, and then you're able to continue to push forward. You know, where does it happen where it gets out of control? You know, when the athletes that you work with, you know, that you see that do let things get out of control, and then they start to go on a downward slope. You know, what are they thinking? What's going through their minds?
Yeah, you know, we talk about with athletes all the time controlling the controllables, control the things that you can control. You know, work on the things that you know you can have influence over. And if something else happens outside of your control, then you let that go and you learn to let that go. We train people to listen to their own self-talk, to what are you saying to yourself that is either boosting your performance or tearing it down. And that goes to what that word that you used a few minutes ago, that awareness. The awareness of what you're saying to yourself. You know, we have 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day, according to research. And somewhere between 60 and 80% of those thoughts are negative. All we have to do is learn to cut out 5 to 10% of that negativity, and it changes our perspective on the world. And that's part of what we teach people to start to focus on so that they can control the controllables.
That's so powerful. Just, yeah, it doesn't have to be this like massive shift, 5 to 10%. And then you know, it can continue to get bigger. You know, you can continue to cut more of the negativity out, but it doesn't have to be like this flip a coin, you know, 50% change and you'll get better.
One of the reasons people fail, one of the reasons athletes go into slumps, is that they set something they want to change, and it's this huge, massive change. Let's say a runner. I was last week or the weekend before last, I was down in the Houston area working with the with marathon runners that were running in the Sugar Land Marathon. And some of them had some unreasonable goals that they wanted to run. And in asking them what their mile times were and, you know, how far they've run and those kinds of things, some of them had made these jumps. You know, I run a 7-minute mile, so you take 7 times 26 and you get what I should run. And I'm going, whoa, you know, hang on here a second. Let's take a more realistic view of these things. Because what happens to a marathon runner when they take that, you know, they want to run, say, under 3 hours or 3.5 hours, and they're only capable of running 5 hours, they get halfway there and they go, well, there's no way I can finish this because I can't meet my time. They took off that, they made this huge space that they want to make up. They've got this huge goal. When we take smaller chunks, when we look at, okay, I want to go from running an 8-minute mile, not to a 7-minute mile, but to a 7.5-minute mile or a 7.75-minute mile, then it's easier to make those changes. We can do the same thing with whatever we're doing with other sports.
Like weightlifting, like, oh, I want to go lift 300 pounds. Like, no, not to, like, don't do that tomorrow. Like, go start with your weight and, you know, 5 pounds here, 5 pounds there.
Exactly. I mean, you wouldn't go from, and I know this one exactly because my back still hurts from 4 years ago when I sprained my back doing a deadlift. I mean, I went from doing a deadlift of 225 pounds to 325, and I sprained my back doing that. And it wasn't that I wasn't capable of it because I got the bar up, but it was a huge jump that I knew better and I shouldn't do it.
And your form must have been.
My form was terrible. And the fact that even though I've taught weight training, I also teach people that when you feel something go wrong, you let go of the bar. And I didn't do that. I went all the way back up and all the way down without dropping the bar. And I've been suffering for almost 5 years because of it. So you do, normally you go up by 5 pounds, sometimes by 2.5 pounds.
Such small increments.
And that keeps us motivated because you reach that goal. If I add 2.5 pounds to whatever you're lifting, you're going to blow by that in a week. And then you can add another 2.5 pounds. And you're going to blow by that in a week. And you're going to make steady progress. If your goal was to increase by 10 pounds and I put 10 pounds on you right away, you're going to fail. Fail a couple of times. And it's going to be demotivating instead of motivating.
Yeah, when you do these small little increments that you build on, it actually, you know, not only are you building your body, you're building your confidence too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So powerful. Man, Mike, so many little nuggets. I love it. So much great information here. I want to also ask you a big question about, you know, what, you know, on a daily basis, what does mental toughness look like for you? You know, for someone listening, they're curious, you know, what does Mike think about on a daily basis? But we're going to do that tomorrow because we're at the end of our time for today. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We're here with Mike Margolis, and, you know, he's the author of The Athlete Within You, A Mental Approach to Sports and Business. And, guys, you could check him out at Mental Training Incorporated. We're going to talk more about what that is too tomorrow. Mike, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests every single day. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency, compassion, and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. If you're really enjoying The Positivity Effect, please tell someone about the show. Together, we can create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world, something that we need so desperately today. So thanks again so much for listening. See you tomorrow for another episode of The Positivity Effect.